Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Through the Smoke on Firehouse.com. This is Billy Goldfeder. This week we're going to talk about the volunteer fire service, the future of the volunteer firefighter in America. And we're going to be talking with Chief Phil Stittleberg. Phil is chairman of the National Volunteer Fire Council, and Chief Timmy Wall. Tim is chairman of the IAFC's Volunteer and Combination Section, often known as VCOS. And we're going to talk with them about the future of volunteer firefighters, the status of the volunteer fire service locally and nationally, its challenges, and the future of the volunteer fire service. So we're going to dig into that in just a little while. But first, there's a couple hot items out there. Most of you by now are certainly aware of the tragic death of Pennsylvania fire instructor and Altoona City fire captain Robert Gallardi, age 47, who passed away while doing some training at the State Fire Academy. Reports are that Bob was cooling down between live burns and training exercises in which he was observing and evaluating a group of instructor candidates dealing with the structure fire. It was on a Sunday afternoon in the two-and-a-half-story building meant to simulate a residence had seen five such exercises already that day. According to Altoona Fire Chief Rennie Santone, between burns he'd come up to cool off a little bit. Another instructor asked Bob if he wanted to take his place. He said, no, I'm doing real well, and he went back to do his job like most of us would have done, or like all of us would have done. Captain Gallardi, although in that capacity functioning as Instructor Gallardi, dunked down into the basement once more, but this time something went terribly wrong. Three instructor candidates found him unconscious on the floor, and they radioed for help. There were safety crews in place, backup lines, RIT team. The EMS was already on the scene, as there should be at any training burn, and they dragged out Captain Gallardi, who was severely burned and unfortunately died 2 days later from those burns he suffered during the exercise. It was the first fatality at the Pennsylvania State Fire Academy. An investigation is underway by NIOSH, which is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. That afternoon, Captain Gallardi was taken to a Lewistown hospital and airlifted to Lehigh Valley Burn Center, and unfortunately, he did succumb to his injuries. We returned, or I personally returned from Altoona, Pennsylvania on Monday, where well over, at least in my estimation, 1,000 or more firefighters from all over the country attended the funeral and paid their respects to this wonderful man. I'd met him in class. I didn't know him well by any means, but it was pretty apparent by the folks who were there and those who spoke that this was truly a fireman's fireman or a firefighter's firefighter. And unfortunately, he leaves behind his wife, Vicki, and his three sons, Kyle, Drew, and Derek, and a very large family, both within and outside the fire service. Of course, while it's too early to speculate what happened, and the commitment by Commissioner Ed Mann in Pennsylvania is second to none. He's made it very clear that what happened will be shared with the world so this doesn't have to happen again. And while the comments that I'm going to make in a second are not specific to this incident, this reminds us of how critical the operations of training must match regular fire operations, from staffing to two in, two out, and all the other factors that help make the fire ground safer. We got to work harder on making the training ground safer. And again, our condolences go out to all members of the Altoona Fire Department, the Pennsylvania Fire Service Academy, and, of course, the family of Captain Gallardi. Another event occurred, and a lot of close calls and not as many line-of-duty deaths recently, which is a good thing, but the close calls keep on happening. An L.A. fire captain was electrocuted last week. 28 years on the job, he sustained a severe electric shock while operating on an aerial ladder. The injured captain was pulseless and non-breathing when he was removed from the ladder by his fellow firefighters, which makes all of us think, do we carry AEDs and EMS equipment on our apparatus? Certainly they had that equipment there, and it saved his life. They defibrillated him and transported him immediately to hospital. He's doing much better, and we're really glad to hear that. And he's going to have a positive recovery, and we're, again, thankful for that. Another electrocution in Santa Clara County that occurred earlier this year, the fire captain who was electrocuted at a dwelling fire, his family's now threatening a suit. they're claiming that the fire department or perhaps even the homeowner is responsible for the death of Fire Captain Mark McCormick in Santa Clara County, California. He was electrocuted in February when he came in contact with a live power wire or a live power line that had fallen while crews tried to put out a house fire in Los Gatos. The family claims the county failed to protect firefighters from fallen lines, and of course officials say the county's not responsible, that his death was an accident. Again, this makes us think about our potential to get hurt or, in this case, electrocuted at what you might consider a routine incident. A couple ideas and thoughts to keep in mind when we're working around electricity down power lines: keep your firefighters a distance away from power lines until the line is de-energized, and only the power company should tell you it's de-energized. And even that, personally, I still don't believe them. We stay away from the lines, period. You got to ensure that the incident commander conveys strategic decisions related to power lines, and everybody on the fire ground knows if there are lines down. We need to establish, implement, and enforce standard operating procedures that address the safety of firefighters when working around down lines or energized electrical equipment. For example, assign one fire ground person to serve as a spotter to ensure that that location of down lines is communicated to everybody on the scene. I mean, at your fire department, who is responsible when there's down lines to make sure no one goes near those lines? Don't apply solid stream water applications on or around energized down power lines or any equipment. And unless there's a real critical need, don't apply any water. Leave it alone till the power company gets there. Ensure that barriers or some sort of device is there to protect firefighters from walking around these hazards. Use cones, fire line tape, or whatever to isolate the energized area, or simply do nothing other than isolate it until the power company arrives. Need to train your firefighters in safety work-related practices when working around electrical energy. In other words, I've always treated all down lines as energized and tell firefighters if it might be hot, it is hot, and it's probably the best way to operate. You know, I've gotten a couple photos recently of firefighters operating. In one case, it was a firefighter taking a pike pole attempting to move power lines. Now, the people wrote me and said, well, the lines were dead. Well, how do they know? I mean, did someone pick it up and touch it? I don't know. To me, unless it's a matter of life and death, screw it. Leave it alone. Leave the wire down and let the power company respond and do their job. In most, almost all cases, we are not qualified to be dealing with electrical lines. So, again, keep this stuff in mind. And, man, some of these injuries and deaths can absolutely be avoided, especially if we know there's down power lines. Isolate the area, stay away, and wait for the power company to show up. Someone says, well, what if they have a two-hour ETA? Who cares? Then we wait 2 hours. We can't risk a firefighter's life. In some other news, apparatus crashes occurred in Phoenix and in Stafford, Virginia. Phoenix last week and in Stafford, Virginia yesterday, and we wish all those involved a quick recovery. The Phoenix incident was a fatality, and a civilian was killed. In the Stafford, Virginia incident yesterday, word is that some firefighters were injured. Not sure if they were belted in or not, but hopefully that information will come out. But again, a reminder, wear your seatbelts. And that's uncomfortable, it's awkward, you have to ride backwards, doesn't matter. Times have changed. And lastly, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a firefighter received severe burns inside a structure fire because he didn't have his gloves on. Somebody wrote in and said, well, this was a probationary firefighter. Even more so then. We have to assume probationary firefighters are not that sharp. Therefore, senior firefighters or officers have to watch every single thing they do, every single move they make, and that includes making sure they have their gloves on. At first, we were told this firefighter was going to lose his hands and his fingers, but we're very thankful that doctors were able to save his hands and fingers, and it looks like he is also going to have a quick recovery and a positive recovery. Again, another close call that could affect any of us at any time. This is all basic stuff that we're all responding to every day. And lastly, our last show on a suggested national fire mutual aid system is up and running. Under the direction of President Bill Killen, the International Association of Fire Chiefs have established a task force with some very prominent and effective leaders serving on that task force to develop a national fire mutual aid system. We'll be watching carefully and share that information with you as they start to gain momentum and move forward. I understand that Chief Killen has given them a very short timeline to get this up and running, because who knows when the next national disaster is going to come. We're going to be back in just a few minutes to discuss the future of volunteer firefighting, or the future of the volunteer firefighter in America, with our guest Chief Phil Stittleberg from the National Volunteer Fire Council and Chief Tim Wall from the International Association of Fire Chiefs Volunteer and Combination Officer Section. We'll be right back.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
We're back on Through the Smoke with Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. This week we're talking about the future of the volunteer firefighter in America, and I don't think there's two more qualified people to talk to us about this than Chief Phil Stittleberg, who is chairman of the National Volunteer Fire Council, and Chief Tim Wall, chairman of the IFC's VCOS section. You know, what is the status of the volunteer fire service? You hear so much back and forth, this company can't get out, but this volunteer company is real successful. This fire company doesn't want to accept change. This company has made changes, and they're keeping up with the paces. We can't recruit people. We can't get people to stay on our department. On and on and on are the quotes and information we get back and forth. So I thought really it would be great to have these two gentlemen on and these two chiefs who agreed to be on with us and talk to us about what their organizations are doing on behalf of volunteer firefighters to help set the tone for the future and to maybe help even solve some problems within the volunteer fire service. So I'm going to let Phil Stittleberg start chatting with us first. And welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Billy, and thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you. And I must say, it seemed to me for a while the NVFC was kind of there, but I didn't see much going on. But in the last couple of years, it looks like there's been a resuscitation, a resurgence, and this is meant with all due respect to those involved, but the fact of the matter is we just weren't hearing much. And probably what I think, and I know you're doing some other stuff as well, but I think the Heart Healthy program has really brought the NVC up to light and is focusing on a real issue out there for the volunteer fire service. So instead of me setting the tone on what you want to talk about, Phil, why don't you tell us about what the NVFC is doing, a little bit about the history, where they are today, and where you see them going in the future.
Well, actually, Billy, the NVFC will celebrate its 30th anniversary next year, 2006. Will mark 30 years of existence.
And you told me I was dating myself before. Now, I remember when it was started, so forget it. I'm heading to the nursing home. You guys are on your own.
Yeah, I was in very near the beginning of it, too, so there you are. At any rate, a lot of history things going. Let me start with addressing this, you know, more philosophical question: where do I see the volunteer fire service headed, and the issue of that you alluded to, you know, difficulty recruiting, difficulty retaining? I think it really depends a great deal where you look. There is no doubt that there are some departments that indeed are having some recruitment and retention challenges. I don't think there's any doubt about that. There are an awful lot of departments that are not experiencing that, and I attribute that to a couple of things. One, I think it depends, as I say, where you ask that question. Volunteerism in the fire service thrives on stability. If you have areas that are very rapidly expanding or very rapidly contracting, that is a difficult environment for the volunteer fire service to be successful in. Rapid expansion means tremendous growth in the demand for services, also frequently a decreased sense of community, which reflects itself in a decreased sense of wanting to volunteer. End up with more demand for services and less people to provide it. In those areas that are contracting severely, frequently it's because of economic considerations. And so you have people that are moving out, people that are taking on second jobs, that sort of thing, that don't have an opportunity then to volunteer their time. So, as I say, I think it depends where we look. In terms of what does the future hold in that regard, let me tell you this. I think that we will, in many instances, continue to see an increase in the number of combination apartments that are created. That, I think, is the likely outcome of those areas that are facing rapid increase in the demand for services while they're still trying to deal with a stable or a decreasing volunteer pool to provide it.
Well, I'll tell you, going from that that transition from going to from a volunteer fire department to a combination department is a real turning point in the success or failure of the future of the organization.
There's absolutely no question about that, and I think that we all understand that leadership in the volunteer service is critical. We have repeatedly in studies identified the primary reason, the absolutely paramount reason that people will leave the volunteer fire service is they don't like the leadership. They don't like the way they're being treated. They don't like the way they're being recognized.
You know, Phil, that, if just that statement is emblazoned and put out there, that's great, and I'm glad you said it. And to the audience, we don't practice this show. We just call in and we start talking, and, I mean, they have an idea that of the subject is. But what I wanted to say to both you and Tim today was it's been my impression and my opinion that the number one biggest cause of volunteer firefighters leaving their organizations is the BS within their own organization, whether it's at the organizational level as far as what I call dumb policies and procedures or leadership issues where leadership has failed.
Just no question about it. And a critical part of leadership when you're talking about the shift to combination departments is the ability to see this as the necessary development. In other words, when you see delayed responses, when you see insufficient staffing, when you see burnout and people leaving because more and more is being expected of less and less people, that's where leadership has to recognize that there is a problem and has to take the appropriate steps to deal with it.
Who's doing something about leadership? You know, I had a chance to participate in a survey, and someone, the question was, what do you think the National Fire Academy should be doing as their number one priority? And my thought was, and I see things in my own very narrow world, admittedly, my thought was that there needs to be a training program on how to be a company officer. I would answer that for both the career and volunteer side, but secondly, a program on how to be an effective volunteer fire officer. Because, you know, in some cases, and I know some career people would cringe in this, but I think sometimes being a volunteer fire officer is much more challenging and much more difficult than being a career fire officer from the paycheck standpoint, from the time standpoint, from the discipline standpoint. And let's face it, in a lot of volunteer fire departments, if you're too tough a chief, they'll vote your ass out.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. But, you know, when you talk about leadership and who's doing something about it, I think that's a great question to ask Chief Wall, because VCOS, of course, presents an excellent leadership seminar symposium every fall.
Oh, Timmy, you want to comment on
it?
Sure. Jump over to you.
Sure. Thank you very much for that compliment, Phil, on the VCOS. And, Billy, thank you for welcoming me and as the leader of the VCOS section. And just following up, I did make a note here. It's leadership. It all boils down to leadership on those points that you brought up with Phil. The VCOS has taken an active role in hosting, we call them the 21st Leadership Programs. It's a weekend course that can be geared to your department, your county, your state affiliation to host a meeting.
So any fire department or fire association can have VCOS or VCOS come in and do a volunteer fire officer leadership training program.
That is correct. There's different modules that we offer and present.
How much does this cost?
Depends on the amount of students. Depends on how many books have to be
ordered. Let's say you got 25 attendees. Is that something? Am I putting you in a corner, Timmy? Or can you give us a ballpark figure?
I would have to say anywhere between probably around $1,000 to $1,500.
For 25 people?
Yep.
That's a bargain. Are there grants available?
Yeah, it's a program that we offer with Pierce Manufacturing. We kind of partner with them. And
but you don't have to drive a Pierce fire truck, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
You just have to go to our website and reach out on how to get the information. We'll send you the form of what your obligations are, whether you're a department that wants to host it, if you're a state training facility that wants to host it. And we go anywhere and everywhere. And we have leaders throughout the United States that we bring in as speakers, and we gear it to what you want us to help educate or help with your department.
What's your website, Tim?
It's VCOS, or actually www.vcos.org.
Okay, or you can access it through the IFC site.
Correct,
as well.
Correct, and we have one standalone also.
Great. I'm going to jump back to Phil, let him continue telling us about the NVFC. Then we'll get back to you, Tim, and you can give us more in-depth information about what VCOS is doing.
Sure.
But I think it was important, and I appreciate Phil segueing into that so we could talk about that training program.
And the symposium.
I'm sure. Oh, okay, yeah, and about your symposium as well. We'll get to that in a minute. Back to you, Phil.
Yes.
Little history about VCOS.
NVFC?
I'm sorry. Yeah, well, you talk about either one if you want. Hell, yeah, this is very informal.
I think we both can talk about both.
iPod, VCOS.
More conversative with NVFC.
Phil, talk about whatever you want to talk about. You're an attorney. I'm not going to argue with you. Tell us about NVFC and the history.
The history, actually, is as I say, we're celebrating our 30th year. It's an organization that represents state firefighter associations. So there's one firefighter association from each state that is actually a member of the NVFC. We have 48 member states, and that's actually our board of directors, one director from each state. And we have then memberships also that are individual memberships, fire department memberships, and corporate memberships, but the governing body, if you will, is from the state association of each of the 48 states.
Why was it formed?
Well, it was formed initially because there was a recognition that there really wasn't a national voice representing the Voluntary Fire Service in the United States. And that is a role that's really moved to fill over the last 30 years.
Okay. What are some of the goals over the 30 years that you've accomplished that you're particularly proud of? And what are some of the goals that are on the table right now that you guys are working on?
Well, in terms of legislative, I think probably our participation in securing the Fire Act grants or AFG grants, whichever you want to call them, probably is one of the most significant developments that we've been involved in quite a long time. That's just been a real achievement, I think, because as you know, of course, a percentage, I believe it's about 56 or 57% of those funds are designated just to volunteer departments, and being able to get that into the legislation was a real achievement so that my small volunteer fire department isn't competing with FDNY right. for the same dollars, and I think that was a big thing.
Phil, is the national, because I think there's a lot of people confused about what roles the NVFC plays, the IAFC, VCOS, and even the IFF, and we're going to get into that in a minute. Is the NVFC essentially a legislative organization?
Well, I think the answer to that is no, although legislation is certainly one of our areas that we emphasize. Let me give you an example why I think not. You, of course, are already aware of our hurricane relief funds. We've got two right. different hurricane relief funds, one for volunteer and combination fire departments, and the other just for volunteer firefighters. We're administering both of those right now. And just as an aside, I'm real pleased to say that we totally provide all administrative support for those at our cost so that there is no deduction from donations for any administrative fee. In other words, a dollar donated to either of those funds, the full dollar goes to whoever the recipient is supposed to be. There's no charge for administration by us.
Okay.
But that's one of the things that's happening. I don't know if you've seen our vehicle operation safety program.
Just came out in the last week or two, didn't it? There seemed to be a lot of blitz on that anyway in the last week or two.
Yeah, about a month now it's been out.
Okay.
You can get to it at our website, nvfc.org.
What's that all about?
And it's absolutely free, and it basically is directed at safe vehicle operation for volunteer and combination fire departments. And it's a beautiful piece of work. It has a self-assessment chart to help you see where your strengths and weaknesses are on your own department. It has SOGs that you can modify and adopt. It has a PowerPoint presentation and quite a lot more.
This is all at nvfc.org?
That is correct.
And it's available whether you belong or not to the NVFC?
That is correct. You go there and it's yours.
Hmm. Now, is it just POV operations or apparatus operations as well?
It's apparatus operations.
Okay, so any fire department, any firefighter anywhere can go to nvfc.org and get this apparatus safety program.
That is correct. The correct title for it is Emergency Vehicle Safe Operations for Volunteer and Small Combination Emergency Service Organizations.
Outstanding. There's got to be an acronym for that, because otherwise...
There is, but no one could pronounce it.
Nobody remembers it. We're talking with Tim Wall from the IFC's VCOS section and Phil Stittleberg from the National Volunteer Fire Council about the future of the volunteer firefighter. We'll come back and ask some questions about who truly is representing the volunteer firefighter in America. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We're back on Through the Smoke with Firehouse at Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Billy Goldfeder, host of Through the Smoke, and we're talking today with Chief Tim Wall, Chairman of the IFC Volunteer and Combination Officer Section, and Chief Phil Stittleberg, Chairman of the National Volunteer Fire Council. Timmy, let's talk a little bit about the IFC VCOS. I personally know where it came from, but why don't you share with the audience where VCOS came from, what current projects you guys and gals are working on, and the future plans for VCOS.
Thank you, Bill. And maybe for the history, you'd have to correct me or point me in the right direction. But basically, there was a organization through the International Association of Fire Chiefs known as the Volunteer Committee, I believe. And through some work and foresight, they come up with the – it was originally called the Volunteer Combination – I'm sorry, Volunteer Chief Officer Section 10 years ago.
Right. For the audience purposes, in the IFC, when you're a committee – you have limited status, and you're very focused on specific projects. If the membership votes for it, you can then become a section, and a section has much more status within the IFC and really a lot more opportunity to get things done. I know that the volunteers did that, and most recently, the newest IAFC section, it went from the Health and Safety Committee to the Safety, Health, and Survival section, so it's similar. Changes what you guys went through, 10 years ago, Tim?
10 years ago. We came on board, and that's where we had to petition the board of directors for a seat and be on the board of directors.
Okay.
And roughly 7-8 years ago, we recognized that through the volunteer chief officer section, that to truly market and reach out and help educate the fire service, we renamed our section the Volunteer Combination Officer Section. And with that, is you know, one of the requirements is you have to be a member of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and you have an opportunity to join the section. We were over 2,200 members strong, with information that exchanged through a quarterly newsletter. We have a website.
I'm a volunteer fire chief. Why should I join? What are you going to do for me?
Well, we're going to offer you a leadership network, chance for a newsletter. Help you educate you and your fire service and or some of the people that are around in your community or your surrounding towns that you might mutual aid with, and say, here's an organization that, and I really believe that the VCOS is geared more towards leadership, offering classes, teaching. We'll be celebrating or hosting our 7th annual symposium, which is a 4-day educational opportunity that is hosted in Florida by the committee. The VCOS is very proud of that. We recognized years ago that there was a need for education and leadership role. And I think Phil talked about it earlier, that we've identified that leadership is a key point.
Are there any hot projects right now that VCOS is working on? I know you got your symposium. I know you have the officer training program and the leadership program. But what's hot on the agenda right now? I know you just changed leadership. Chief Larry Curl was the very successful chairman of VCOS for years, and through the democratic process of elections, you are now the chairman. So what have you been doing, and what's hot right now, Timmy? What are you going to get done?
Well, what's hot now is we're looking forward. We have 358 members registered for a symposium next weekend in November. We are working with the National Fallen Firefighters Association, the National Fallen Firefighters
Foundation.
Ron Sarnicki's group. We're trying to really educate and promote the 16 initiatives, and we're going to work with Ron and his group, hopefully at the symposium, to come up with a plan. We've actually invested an educational opportunity or or you know, how do we educate the fire service about the 16 initiatives? And that is something that is at a forefront with us.
Okay.
We work with the IAFC on the stand down day to identify how the military, you know, we borrowed it from the military, and according to a report from Bob DiPoli and Gary Breeze, it seemed to work.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it definitely worked. It made a difference. What about your relationship or the lack thereof or communication or interaction between the National Volunteer Fire Council and the IFC's VCOS, either one?
Well, I think our communication is good. I mean, it could be always better. Phil has been the presenter and a speaker at our symposium. We've offered that. We have attended some of their meetings. We've just recently, it's been a year, year and a half, I shouldn't say as recently, but the Fire Corps program that we work jointly with and we help promote. I know Heather Schaefer works very hard for them, and Larry Curl works very hard for us.
Okay.
And, Billy, are you familiar, or maybe your listeners might appreciate some kind of recitation of what the Fire Corps program is about?
I'm familiar with Fire Corps. I'm still scratching my head about it. I'm going to give you a chance to comment and hopefully prove me wrong or confuse me even more. But my understanding is that the Fire Corps program is an opportunity for civilians to assist their fire department in a non-operational standpoint.
That is correct.
Okay. And my scratch is, why not let them help out more? And what I start thinking is, it probably would have pissed off the IFF when we were doing a national recruitment for volunteer firefighters. Is that true?
Well, first of all, no, because the IAFF is also a member of the Fire Corps program.
But only because only because they're recruiting non-operational people.
That is correct. But
okay.
the whole thrust of the program from its inception was to recruit non-operational people.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That was not a modification thrown in at the end in order to integrate another organization. And just to follow up on what Chief Wall was saying about cooperation with VCOS and NVFC, VCOS and NVFC are two of the organizations that are administering this program.
Right.
Now, having said that, let me just tell you, since you brought up the issue of non-operational and what was the purpose of that, here's my philosophy of it. My philosophy is that for as far back as the Volunteer Fire Service has been in existence in this country, we have had what I describe as the Marine Corps mentality. And what I mean by the Marine Corps mentality is in the Marines, every Marine is first going to learn to be a rifleman. Every single person is going to learn how to fire a rifle, and then they will be taught to be a cook or a clerk or whatever it happens to be, but they have to fire a rifle and be qualified with a rifle to be a Marine.
Sure.
We've had that same approach with the Volunteer Fire Service.
Sure, everyone has to go through fire school.
If you want to work for us, you've got to be a firefighter first.
Right.
And after that, then we're going to expect you to help out with pub ed and truck maintenance and record keeping and public and fire inspections and fundraising and all the rest of the things that go with this. And by doing that, we have automatically excluded a large portion of our communities that may either be uninterested in being a firefighter because they don't like the risk or the inconvenience of it, or may have work schedules that prevent them from doing this, or may have disabilities or any number of other reasons. So what Fire Corps is doing is bringing into the fire station those people who have skills to contribute. It may be helping record keeping, maintenance, preparing.
So supplement and support, basically.
Absolutely. Non-operational roles.
Right.
Which serves a couple of purposes. One, it provides buy-in from the community to the Volunteer Fire Service. And two, it frees up the operational folks when we're dealing with these issues of burnout and too many calls and too many responsibilities. By getting them back to being able to do what it was they joined the fire service to do, that is, to go to the fire.
As volunteers.
Okay. That is correct.
So on the career side, you're recruiting people who would support the career fire departments or career firefighters in a career setting, but yet we're not recruiting volunteer firefighters, so therefore there's really no threat to their jobs, and it kind of makes the career volunteer problem go away in that setting.
That's absolutely correct. Okay. One of the things that, you know, the paid people talk about is, look, in a lot of the larger cities, you know, the fire service has become isolated in that, there's not a sense of community. People don't view the fire station as a place where they are welcome. And this is an opportunity to get buy-in from the public.
Right.
To the paid service,
and okay. and that also leads into Bill and Phil that I think by offering this program you may get somebody involved in your volunteer fire department or your career department, but it will help you in the long run because it educates them whether on the volunteer side if you're doing a campaign for fundraising, it makes you think in your recruiting and retention to think outside the box, and saying, hey, we need people not just to respond.
Sure, sure.
And it frees up your membership. This goes back to that leadership
absolutely,
question before, saying we have to, as leaders and volunteer chief officers or officers, saying we can't do all. So how can we do something?
Well, I think, yeah, and that's a great point, Tim. I think that's reiterating what Phil said, is expecting every member to do everything. And I remember when I was a real young volunteer firefighter, making the drills, making the training, then Sunday had to do fundraising, then had to attend this, then had to do that. And this helps kind of ease up some of that so the responders can respond. And from the career standpoint, an all-career department, it provides people, especially when so many career departments are so poorly staffed these days, it provides people to help supplement and almost market that career fire department within their community as well, and hopefully get more support for them as, in that setting as well. So,
and we recognize in the combination department, there, you know, it could be a, you know, the department could be career and volunteer.
Right, right, and these
so
folks fit in either way. So good. Okay, so Fire Corps, that's interesting to learn a little bit about
and
that.
And the website for that is www.firecorps.org.
Firecorps.org. Okay, cool. We'll check it out. We're going to come back, and I want to talk to you about, and since I was touching on the IFF, an organization I'm a big fan of, because honestly I still say that there's no organization out there that represents their members better, and there's no organization, as far as firefighters, and there's no organization that's been as focused so long on firefighter safety. But a career firefighter knows if they belong to the IFF, they're going to go to bat for them. My question is going to be, and we're going to come back, who's going to bat nationally for the volunteer firefighter? We're talking to Phil Stittleberg, fire chief out in Wisconsin, who's chairman of the National Volunteer Fire Council, and Chief Tim Wall, a fire chief in Connecticut, chairman of the IFC's Volunteer and Combination Officer Section. This is radio at firehouse.com. Through the Smoke, we'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back on radio at firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. We're talking with the leadership of the Volunteer Fire Service across the nation, at least the two organizations that primarily represent volunteers, and that's the National Volunteer Fire Council and the IAFC's VCOS. Phil, you explained that the National Volunteer Fire Council is basically a state-based organization with one rep from every state. Now, is that correct, Phil? Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Tim, the Volunteer Combination Officer Section, who leads that? And I'll be honest with you, watching that, it's been some of the same faces for a long time, and that may indicate they're very, very successful at what they do. Who is VCOS? Who is their board? How do you become a board member for VCOS?
Well, it reverts back that you need to be an IFC member along with the VCOS section. Our elections are held annually at our annual FRI conference, whenever that falls. It's a 10-member board that is elected by the body, and it's done by, once a year we have an election. Probably when we first started to go 10 years ago, Billy, it was a yearly thing. I mean, you know, 10 people ran, it was a year
right.
commitment. So we changed the bylaws, and basically you have a 3, 2, and a 1-year term.
So it's scattered a little bit.
Scattered a little bit, so it keeps people fresh, keeps new ideas coming in.
Are there term limits?
No term limits, only by election.
Okay, so you can stay in there as long as you get elected.
That's correct. And,
or not you, but anybody.
Anybody. Anybody has an opportunity to run. We're, of the 10 members, you're represented. There's no more than 2 division. So we'll give you an example from New England or Southwest Division or Western. There could be no more than 2 members elected to the board. That was created so we have a cross-representation of the volunteer combination officer section.
You have to be an active volunteer fire chief?
You have to be a member of the IFC, and you have to be a member of the VCOS. So I would say we stick with active chief officers. We want people who are involved out on the street, out on fighting fires, fighting
so everyone on the VCOS board is still responding to fires as volunteer firefighters?
Or they have a role in their active volunteer fire department. They are active.
Right, cool. Okay, good.
And we have four meetings a year. We have one at our symposium in November. We have May and February. We actually go on a weekend. We take a tour. And we encourage to go to firehouses. We're hosted by a fire department. And
right.
We get in and we meet with the people. I mean, we're not in some big office and nobody can know who we are. Our meetings are open. We invite guests. And we get out
for two
meetings a year to meet the firefighters and
in the fire
hear
stations,
their concerns. So. That's correct.
Very good. There's no question, I guess, at least in my mind, and I get to host the show, so I'm allowed to share what's in my mind. A career union firefighter in the United States is very well represented by the International Association of Firefighters. The IFF is a good, strong, and very aggressive organization on behalf of their members. Now, clearly, organizations, and whether they be combination or even volunteer firefighters, all firefighters across the country have benefited indirectly by the efforts of the IFF in legislation and firefighter safety, and particularly in firefighter safety. And I just think they're an extremely effective organization in what they do for their members. And as I've said many times, when people are annoyed about this or that, my response is, why wouldn't you want them representing you? Because they truly look out for the interests of the members of their organization. Since an individual firefighter can't really join the NVFC as an elect or as a voting member, is that correct, Phil?
That is correct.
Okay. And an individual firefighter cannot join the IAFC VCOS section unless they meet the requirements of being a member of the IFC. Is that correct, Timmy?
That is correct.
Is there a need in this country for an organization that represents the volunteer firefighter? And I just can't, this question's been on my mind for years. I actually suggested, and of course it's inappropriate, that the IFF consider something for combination or volunteer firefighters, but they're a labor organization, and that makes sense. That's the business they're in. They take care of their members. But there is no, in my opinion, there are indirect voices, and clearly the NVFC and the IFC VCOS does a great job in representing their members, but there is no one voice for the volunteer firefighter in this country, and I wonder if there's a need for that. And recently we saw some of that come up with Katrina, for example, when career firefighters were split from volunteer firefighters. And my understanding of that, it was poorly communicated, but really what they were doing was acknowledging that career firefighters can be held more accountable and are more organized, and therefore the FEMA folks were looking for those teams of two career firefighters first to solve a problem. But it stirred people up. It made them wonder. Why can't we go? Why can't we as volunteer firefighters go? Were the questions and all the comments and all the discussions. Who is working to enhance volunteer participation in future disasters? Again, who's the voice of the volunteer fire service for that? What about benefits for volunteer firefighters that respond to national disasters? In one school of thought, now, of course, if you respond as a career firefighter, your salary is paid. If you respond as a volunteer firefighter, your salary may or may not be paid. Should volunteer firefighters get salary reimbursement? Or, hey, you're a volunteer firefighter. You volunteer to be on a USAR team or respond to a disaster. You obviously have the time to do it. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. What about the average rank-and-file volunteer firefighter having a voice? Do you think there's a need for maybe the NVFC and the IFC VCOS to maybe get their heads together and think about this and take a look? In some respects, people feel that the volunteer fire service is dying. My response back to that, it's a local problem. Fix it. It's not dying nationally. It's dying because locally you're letting it die for some of the reasons we talked about at the beginning of the show. But what do you guys think about that idea of either VCOS and NVFC getting together and looking at some sort of a vehicle to represent all volunteer firefighters, or at least hashing the idea out and coming up with some solutions? Or maybe you don't think there's a need. Phil, what do you think?
Well, let me use your inquiry about the FEMA two-person response teams as a jumping-off point.
Sure.
And why the paid service was mobilized before the volunteer service was. I was contacted by Chief Paulison, who at that time was USFA administrator, prior to the implementation of that entire program. And he said that the reason that they were going to ask for the paid service to volunteer two-person teams initially was because there was already in place the provision for determining how much those folks would be paid and what the mechanism was for paying them.
As well as backgrounds, too. Frankly, I think that came up as well. And I talked to Dave as well, and he said that, you know, they're generally a career firefighter has a full background check and a full criminal check, and those employment issues are already in place, if you will. Is that sort of the same kind of thing you're implying here, Phil?
Well, not exactly. The primary issue was how people were going to be paid.
Okay.
And there was already a process in place for paying the paid service. There was not such a process in place for volunteers.
Okay.
The criminal background check issue was there as to both. If you recall, when the notices went out, in both of the notices, it required that the people responding had criminal background checks.
Well, the volunteer notice came out after, though, the career one, several days later.
That is correct. Two days later, and it said the same thing. They said the same thing.
Right.
As I say, 2 days later, the call for the volunteers went out, because at that point they had gotten in place the process for paying the volunteers.
Right.
And I have spoken to Dr. O'Neill, who was involved in that process just a couple of weeks ago, to reconfirm that the next time, if this occurs again, the call-up will be made simultaneously. So
And it will be?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that's great, and I think that makes a problem go away. But I'll tell you, the firefighters who were so anxious to go down and then found out they were doing community service work, shame on them. Read what it said. There was a whole bunch of upset firefighters all ready to go down. They brought their bunker gear with them, and it clearly stated in both the career and that volunteer announcement, these are non-operational positions.
Right, but that's an entirely separate issue.
Oh, I know. I just want to bring it up.
You're right, Bill.
At different times.
Yeah, we just want to bring that up because it ties into that you know they were mad about the career volunteer issue, and then some were mad because they didn't get to do what they wanted to do. Well, you know what? If your mother says come in and sweep the floor, and you'd rather paint the wall, she's going to smack you because she asked you to sweep the floor. So
there was
they didn't read what it said.
There was no confusion in the way the notices read.
No, it wasn't at all. So okay,
but at any rate, that's
go ahead. Yeah,
using that as the jumping off point for where's the voice. As I say, Chief Paulison contacted us prior to the announcement going out and explained this problem, and that problem's been corrected. The voice of the volunteers was not only heard, but it was solicited by the fire administration at the time this was being put together.
Was VCOS contacted?
Yes, they were. We were on a conference call with Bill Killen and Jim Arms and Gary Breeze and a full board. This was a question that was presented to me, and what I agreed on was, listen, people are asking for help. Let's not get hung up on egos. Get the help, get it taken care of, and let's get the volunteers in and get the questions answered. And that happened, what, 2 days later?
Yeah, I think the notice for the volunteer sector went out, I think, 2 days after the paid, 2 or 3 days. It wasn't long.
And you think it would be more effective, perhaps, if there was one line of communication for volunteer firefighters?
Well, you know, I think you have to recognize that the VCOS and the NVSC fill different roles, I think, in representing volunteers. The VCOS is very active in providing training, and Chief Walls described their leadership seminars and that sort of thing.
Right.
The NVSC, on the other hand, has concentrated more in the legislative arena and in the standards drafting arena. We've got representatives on, I think it's about 8 different NFPA committees that affect firefighters.
Okay, so if someone's listening to the show and they would like to see either of your two organizations become stronger in one particular area or another, they merely need to become a member either through their state or through their chief and express what they want your boards to accomplish.
Well, I don't know about accomplished, Bill, but I think it's them bringing situations forward or how things affected them. Sometimes they're a local thing or a state thing that
right.
either organization can't get involved. But you look at that's how I mentioned earlier that the VCOS, you know, goes on the road for two meetings, and that's how we, you know, get educated, updated on what's actually happening in the fire service.
Do you think there's a value maybe if and again I'm pushing this because I see both very successful organizations, but I still think that there's a need for one focus. Do you think maybe there's a value in the executive boards, if you will, of both VCOS and the NVSC meeting formally on a regular basis, say every year or every 6 months, to discuss common issues that affect volunteer firefighters?
Well, actually, we have conference calls every 3 months.
Excellent.
Just
wow.
Doing precisely okay. that. Now, I was just saying to Chief Wall that we have gotten behind schedule on doing that and need to set one up again. But this has been going on for a number of years.
Okay. And see, I mean, I think I'm in the know to some extent, at least average, and I didn't know that. And I think that needs to be marketed. One person just emailed in and said, why is the absolute perception that the two of the organizations don't talk or work together? Don't take that they do because they don't. And here's someone who is an active, actually, he's a president of a particular county volunteer association, and he wasn't aware. So I think if every 90 days VCOS and the NVFC are conference calling, talking about and working on common goals, That's great, and that really needs to be marketed.
Well, and of course, VCOS usually has a member that attends our semi-annual meetings.
Uh-huh.
You know, as I say, they're all of us sit together on the fire corps board.
Right.
And I can't recall all the other things we do, but there's a bunch of them.
Okay. Well, you know, you got back the NFP representation. I know. I believe. You know, you were a presenter at our symposium as president of the NVFC.
Well, I mean,
and I think, Billy, you raised a good point. We need to educate them, and we don't do that.
I think you're working with each other at a limited basis. And, I mean, who am I to suggest what you do? It's up to you what you want to do. But I think there's a real need out there for more of a strong focus on the volunteer firefighter and clearly maintaining separate organizations, but maybe even establishing a task force or a common committee that works with both groups to focus on the needs of the volunteer firefighter, not unlike the IFF focuses on the need of the career firefighter. I mean, it would be wonderful if one group would just focus on firefighters, but that's not our world, and that's understandable. But with the two great organizations, NVFC and VCOS, getting some good stuff done, and you have, I think there's a role in the future. Near future with those, I mean, the 90-day conference calls are great. Market those. Let people know what's getting done, what you're talking about, what your focus is, and maybe even create some sort of a group in between. I don't know. Again, my idea is you can do what you want with them, or you can hit delete and eliminate this whole show from your tape recorder at the same time. But I try and solicit input from a lot of different people when we go on with these shows, and there really seems to be a crying need for a stronger voice for the volunteer firefighter in the United States. We'll be back in just a minute with some concluding remarks. This is Through the Smoke, Firehouse, radio at firehouse.com. We're talking about volunteer firefighters.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
Back at radio at firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. We're talking about the future and current status of volunteer firefighting in the United States. We're talking with the two lead organizations of the Volunteer Fire Service, the National Volunteer Fire Council, and the IFC's Volunteer and Accommodation Officer Section, and what they've done, what they're doing, what they plan to do in the future. You know, one of the issues I did want to talk about today, but we're running out of time, is the issue of career firefighters volunteering and volunteer firefighters functioning as career firefighters, known as the two-hatter issue, but we're going to talk about that sometime in the near future. So as we wrap it up, I want to give each of you a chance to say a few comments, but before you do that, I'd like to comment. Naturally, I appreciate you being on the show, and my conclusion or what I've gained out of this today is that the IFC VCOS section is primarily a leadership support organization, and the National Volunteer Fire Council, based at the state level with a national focus, primarily on legislative needs as well as benefits for their members, and certainly provide some great programs for their members of their organizations as well. I still maintain that more publicized information on what the two organizations are doing together on behalf of all volunteer firefighters, and perhaps even a live or living group that works between the two, made up of members of both, focusing on volunteer firefighters as well. There certainly seems to be the perception that there's a need out there for that. So, Phil, Chief Phil Stittleberg, thanks for being with us today. Phil, how about a few comments before we wrap this up?
You mentioned membership a little earlier on, Billy, and I was simply going to say that we as any organization would welcome members, but you don't have to be a member to take advantage of an awful lot of the good stuff that's out there. On our www.nvsc.org website, plug into the Fired Up for Fitness program, which deals with volunteer firefighter fitness, or the Heart Healthy program, which we're very, very proud of. We are
as you should be. Absolutely fantastic.
Congratulations on that, Phil. That is excellent.
Dealing with what we all know to be one of the primary or the primary killer of all firefighters is heart attacks. So those are a couple of really important programs that are out there. They are for volunteers. You do not have to be a member, nor do you have to be a volunteer for that member to take advantage of it.
That's a great example. You go to any of the big conferences, you guys and gals are there. You're taking blood, doing the cholesterol checks, the BPs, and career and volunteer firefighters can take advantage of that for free, like most of your programs, right?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, cool. Well, that's great. Anything you want to add?
That covers it.
Okay, well, thanks again. Tim Wall from Connecticut, an active fire chief up there, and chairman, current, newly elected chairman of the IFC's Volunteer and Combinations section. Tim, final word from you.
Just adding that the VCOS takes a very active role in education, training, and safety. To get information on the VCOS, you can go to www.vcos.org and encourage everyone to potentially look at a Blue Ribbon report that was written back in March of 2004. And it was a call for action. It's known as the Blue Ribbon Report, Preserving and Improving the Future of the Volunteer Fire Service. This coming November, we're going to be printing the known as the Red Ribbon Report and releasing to the those attendees at the VCOS Symposium. And shortly after that, it will be posted on our website. It addresses some needs of recruiting, retention, legislation, and education, along with safety, and that's what the VCOS is about.
Well,
encourage people to go to the website, contact me as leader, or contact one of our board members who are throughout the United States.
There's a lot more going on out there for volunteer firefighters than most volunteer firefighters realize. And during the break, we had a discussion that most volunteer firefighters these days, or certainly a large amount of them, are busy enough just to keep active within their own fire companies. Not to mention regional, county, or state organizations, which stresses their time even more. But it's important that the national that there be a national voice for volunteer firefighters. There are two great organizations that are doing that, and that's the NVFC and the IFC VCOS. We on this show would really be interested to hear back on your regular 90-day meetings on what you're focusing on jointly. To show the fire service, particularly the volunteer fire service, that you are working on behalf of all members of the fire service who volunteer their time. This is Billy Goldfeder, host of Through the Smoke. This is radio at firehouse.com. We'll see you next week.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.